Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Advise Show Radio, the station that brings you intense discussions about the hottest topics. Make sure you join us by calling in at 347-996-3350. Now, here are your hosts, Gabriella and The Advise Show.
What's going on, everyone? Time for tonight's show. The show topic for tonight is the double standards in American media. And before we get started with all that particular jazz of that topic, we have Miss Judy from Bad Girls Club New Orleans, Love Games, Bad Girls Club All Stars on the show. We'll bring her in shortly. But before we do that, how you doing, Miss Gabriella?
I'm good.
You good. All right. You ready to get started on this interview, Miss Gabriella?
Pretty much.
Wow, Miss Gabriella, just like that? All right.
I mean, okay, fine. What am I supposed to say?
This girl, you see what I got to deal with, y'all, with this girl? Anyway, Miss Judy, how you doing? Hello, Judy. Okay, Judy has dropped our call. We'll get Judy back on the line here shortly. I guess you'll call back in. Miss Gabriella, while Miss Judy gets herself back on the line, how is everything going on today?
Yeah, everything's going good. I got some good news. I have a lot of projects happening, a lot of things that I'm making a lot of changes to help push my career forward. So
hold on a second, Ms. Gabriella. Hold on a second. Let's see. I found it right here. Let's see here. Hey,
hello?
Judy.
Yeah,
Judy.
But it was, can you hear me now?
I can hear you good.
Okay, it was real staticky on my cell phone. I could hardly hear anything, so I called from my house phone.
Okay, perfect. Well, first of all, we want to thank you for joining us for the show tonight.
Thank you for having me. I'm really, really excited.
Okay, we're glad to have you. So, Judy, I got to ask you a question. Now, I've sat here and I have watched your season of Bad Girls Club New Orleans. Now, let me ask you a question, Judy. How did you end up on that show?
I honestly have no idea. Like, when my friend told me, because, you know, not everybody got oxygen. So I had never actually seen the Bad Girls Club before. And one day I was at my friend's house, and she was like, you know what, there's this show that I think you would be perfect for, because all these girls do is get drunk and act crazy. So I was like, oh, my God, that's perfect. Like, free liquor, I'm definitely there. So the casting call came to Chicago. And I went, like, literally to open casting call with so many people trying out. Like, me, I was like, oh, man, you know, this is once in, like, what, 1,000 people? Like, I'll never make it. But, like, ironically, like, I just kept making the rounds and stuff. In the newspaper, they say it's, like, the calling cast for, like, the crazies. So, obviously, I'm a little loony. So, I kept making it, and I made it.
So how many times do you have to go back? Like, I mean, it was a bunch of auditions to be on the show. Like, what were they asking you?
Well, the first thing was an open casting call. I went, you fill out, like, this long, you know, questionnaire and stuff. And then they meet with you in a group of 8. So it was 7 other girls with me, and it's 1 casting director. And they pretty much ask stuff like, you know, general questions like, say one word that describes you, or, you know, what would you do in this situation, or what would you do in that situation? And, like, I guess my answers were, like, really blunt and really different, because I really wasn't trying to impress, you know, the casting director like everybody else at the table was. I was just being me. And, you know, these casting directors, you know, have been in this industry for a long time doing other television shows, like, you know, VH1, like Flavor of Love, I Love New York, like Charm School, like all these other shows. So they know what they're looking for, and they know you already like the back of their hand. So people know if you're not being yourself or being yourself. So after that, I actually got called back to do an on-camera interview one-on-one. And after that interview, it's like literally that interview was about 2 hours long. It was my first time on camera. It was really hot, nerve-wracking, but I was still myself. And to mention, I drank like a whole bottle of vodka. So I was in there cutting up, and, like, they really thought, like, I was funny and entertaining, so they gave me a video disc to send in, like, a home video. You know, like, they wanted me to show them what I do in a day of a life of Judy. Like, so I showed them at the time I worked at a strip club. Not stripping, but I was a cashier. You know, I was raised as an only child. So I showed them, like, kind of how spoiled I am. My mom, my dad, like, my family, like, having fun, partying. It was stuff like that. And then after that, it was, like, 2 months of background check. Like, they called my ex-boyfriends, they called best friends, they called teachers, they called, like, my bosses in the workplace. Even when I wasn't around, like, I didn't know they were doing any of this until, like, my people would call me, like, hey, you know, the casting directors just called. So that gave them a chance to get to know me from another person's perspective, you know, not just me talking about myself. But they do a lot of background check, and literally the whole casting was about 3 months, and then I got flown to L.A., and this is, like, when I met, like, you know, the executive producers, the producers. Like, this was when stuff started getting really real. And then, like, a week later, I got a call and told me, you know, be ready. You're flying out to New Orleans tomorrow. So it seemed like a really long process. But as soon as you fly to L.A. and you're about to make it, it seems like it happens in, like, 20 seconds. It was really, really crazy and fun and an experience I will never forget.
Okay, so when you got to the house in New Orleans, you stepped foot in the house. You met all these different girls you never met before. Were you overwhelmed by the situation? Because, I mean, from at least from what I saw, you like, he was just happy to meet people and just want to have fun.
I was. That is how it was. You know, I didn't know I would be the first person in the house. So I was real nervous before I walked in, you know, but then when I realized I was the first one, I was like, well, you know, okay, like, turn up, you know. So the first thing I went for was the voodoo doll and the liquor. So honestly,
yeah. What was up with you with that voodoo doll?
I still have her. She's actually right next to me. Like, I still, yes, I still have Miss Voodoo. Like, that is somebody that I would love for the rest of my life. Like, she was my realest friend in the house. So you gotta stay loyal to those who stay loyal to you. You know.
No, I gotta laugh about something else too. I saw with you on that show. It don't matter if you was tore up from the floor up. You had that purse that looked like it was bigger than you. Everywhere you went, you carried that purse. Like, I know nobody will jack you for your money. And you carried that thing everywhere.
Look, you know, I carried my purse because it was like, what the hell? We're in a house with six other girls. I don't know these girls like the back of my hand. So I thought it was kind of crazy for nobody to carry their purse around. You know, and then on top of that, I'm from Chicago. So there's a lot of, you know, robbings and stealings that happen out here. So I'm not about to get robbed. At least I'm not on national television. Like, I'd rather get my ass whooped than robbed, you know?
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question. So, obviously, at Bad Girls Club, New Orleans is over. You got asked to be back on Love Games, correct?
Yes.
Okay, now, how did that come up? They came up to you, and they say, hey, Judy, we like you. Just, you're crazy. We like your personality. I think you can, because I, when I saw you on TV, I was like, oh, she's interested to watch, because you always have something going on.
Yes, yes. And, well, okay, so the day that I left New Orleans, I actually stayed in Louisiana because my family really is from there. Like, I was born in Lake Charles. So my mom had drove down there to pick me up, you know, and we went back to the family's house in Lake Charles. Literally the next day after I moved out of the New Orleans house, I got a call from the producers and asked if I would like to do Love Games. So that's when I got really, really excited because I realized, like, dang, I didn't do this for nothing. Like, you know, I didn't get tortured and bullied like for nothing. Like, I actually had fun and they're giving me another experience, you know. So I was definitely excited to get casted for Love Games.
No, I saw something on the internet and I thought it was funny. What happened to you on that airplane? You
oh
were going
God.
Off on that airplane.
No, like, serious? No, like, for real, girl, I hate heights. Like, I'm really, really afraid to fly. I'm afraid to climb a ladder. Shit, I'm afraid to go on the second floor and look out my window. Like, I'm afraid of heights. So it's like, on the airplane, as much as I fly, I still hate it. I never got over the turbulence and any of that. And, like, what the hell? It's a big-ass piece of metal flying in the air. Like, it could crash any time. So I'm on the airplane, and I'm sitting next to this, like, corporate, you know, a guy, you know, blue-collared, obviously works, you know, in corporate America. And he flies a lot, too. So he had these, like, drink tickets. Like, you know, you can get free drinks and stuff. And he had a lot. So he started, you know, giving me cranberry and vodkas, and, you know, we started talking, and he was like, well, what are you coming to Houston for? Actually, y'all are in Houston. I was flying to Houston to do, like, this little reality spoof, like, you know, video or whatever. It's actually really ratchet, and it's on YouTube and WorldStar. It was with It, like, you know, It from VH1, I Love New York or
oh,
whatever.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. That boy
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, like, it, so it was with him, and they got me, Erica from season 5, and Stassi from my season as well. So I'm telling him, like, you know, I'm on television, I'm flying down here for this, you know, an event and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I'm really, really loud, so I guess my voice was, like, carrying. So this woman, like, diagonally across from me turns around, and she's like, if you're on the Bad Girls Club, then why aren't you sitting in first class? Like, and that made me really mad because it's like, bitch, no matter where I'm sitting on this airplane, if it decides to go down, we're going to die no matter where we're sitting. So, like, yeah. And, you know, like, by that time I had, like, 8 cranberry and vodka, so, you know, I was turned out, waka-flocky, like, all
yeah,
that.
Cause we see when you get all drunk, Judy. You be acting a straight fool. I ain't gonna even lie, but you happy. You a happy drunk. I haven't seen you
I'm
just
happy.
Fight.
It goes through phases. Like, okay, I start drinking. I turn up. Yay, that's fun, Judy. Then it, like, hits a climax, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm paranoid, Judy. And then, like, it goes into, like, this, what Oxygen likes to call it, is the Judy hole. And that's, like, when I black out, and that's when, like, everything, like, anything can happen at that point.
That's when you start crying?
I definitely, that's the ending of it. Like, when I'm coming down off my drunk, I get real sad and start crying about anything. It could be like a full moon outside, and for some reason, I think that's really sad.
Now, let me ask you about Bad Girls Club All-Stars. Like,
yes.
I thought you was going to coast through there and win that. I didn't think they would vote you off.
You know what? Everybody thought that I was going to win, and everybody was really rooting for me, too. But... And that type of show, like, okay, I won Love Games. And that type of show, All-Star Battle was the first show that I did that was really different. Like, because on Love Games, okay, you date the boys, and you actually do meet connections, you know, with the boys. But on All-Star Battle, it's like 14 other girls, and it's competition. Like, it's very competitive. And I think I played my game wrong. See, I'm really, like, a good person, so it was hard for me to try to backstab people, especially over money, like, because I feel like money comes and goes. And I just felt like, you know, me being everybody's friend and me not doing anything bogus, like, I did deserve to win, you know what I'm saying, while everybody else was backstabbing, doing a whole bunch of stuff. But I did make it far. You know, I made 6th place. That's not good enough. But I know that I'll be able to have another chance to play my game a little bit better than what I did on the first season.
Yeah, because I heard, what, season 2 coming up, what, in January, correct?
Yeah, season 2 is coming up. I am not on season 2, but I can assure you that I will be back on television.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to just make sure. Now, so let me ask, Ms. Gabrielle, you have anything to ask her before I ask us another line of questioning?
I mean, I don't know if you're ready to start talking about what you're planning on doing right now.
Yes, I can.
So, okay, because we wanted to know, because you said you were talking about how you were doing charities. Like, what kind of charities are you involved in?
Well, actually, I have an ongoing charity. It's at Larrabitas Children's Hospital here in Chicago, and it's for children with sickle cell. And you could go to larrabitas.org and donate. Yeah, you could donate anytime to children with sickle cell. I feel like, you know, in my past, what a lot of people don't know is, like, you know, I've went through things. Everybody's human. You all go through things to make you the person you are today. So sometimes people need to sit back and understand why people do things instead of what they did. You know, so I have a soft spot for children who, you know, are going through things. So this charity of Larrabitas Children's Hospital helps people not only with sickle cell, but children who have been through traumatic, you know, things in their life, from rape, abuse, to, you know, just maybe, you know, a child who was an outcast. So that really helps with that. And also for Christmas, I'm doing a toy drive out here in Chicago. You know, like I said, I've stated before, I was the only child, so I have a ton of toys, like toys that are still practically brand new that I will never play with again. So I'm going to, you know, take a lot of my old clothes and a lot of my toys and do a toy drive and hope that, you know, people come out and support, because there are so many kids out here that aren't, you know, as lucky as the rest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's Judy, let me say something. That is very awesome that you're doing something positive, because, you know, all they show about you is just, you know, you getting turned up at the club and you crying and you drunk and everything. They don't talk about anything positive that you're doing. And, you know, sickle cell definitely affects, you know, African-American people. And more people, you know, need to talk about that. And also, you say you're going to help the kids out for Christmas and get – see, this is a thing that I like to hear. Because, you know, you're using your, you know, your name, your influence you have now for something positive.
Yes, like, to me it's not, like, yeah, have a great time, party and have fun, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, we're all in this world together, and people don't get anywhere without doing, you know, nice things for other people. I just feel like it's really important to give good karma out into the universe, you know, because we are the this generation, to me, is messed up, and I feel like the kids are the future. So, you know, giving somebody a toy or an extra piece of clothing or, you know, putting food in somebody's mouth can make them, you know, see the world in a different light and maybe hopefully help them grow up to be a better person and not to grow up to be bitter. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so you mentioned this generation messed up. Why do you think the generation messed up?
I just, you know what, I was born in 89, so I was, you know, raised as a 90s baby, and, you know, like, okay, from Bad Girl stuff, you know, we get a lot of fans, a lot of, you know, little fans and stuff. And I, you know, sometimes on my Instagram and stuff, like, kids who are, like, 10 years old tweet me with the most, like, nonsense. Like, really, like, they already know, like, you know, curse words and just stuff that at 10, at my age, I didn't even, you know or think about. And I feel like in this generation, the kids are growing up, yes, I will say, watching shows like The Bad Girls Club, watching shows like, you know, Love and Hip Hop, you know, where they see men deliberately cheating on, you know, their wives and their spouse, and they grow up in the time where rap isn't rap anymore. Like, you know, like I, like I said, grew up in the 90s, so I listen to real music, like, you know, real, you know, like real music. Nowadays, as much as I love my Gucci and my Jeezy and my Waka Flocka, it's like, that's fun to listen to in the club to have fun at. But
that's,
it's a problem.
Music.
Yeah, it's
but
a problem.
But people think
when,
that's a lifestyle. They actually embrace
that. Yeah, you know, it's
culture.
Not. You know what I'm saying? Like, these people have to realize, like, what you see on television and what you hear in the music, it is entertainment. That does not mean you actually have to be like that every day in your life. So it's sad because where there was Boys to Men and, you know, Casey and JoJo and, like, real music that, you know, showed love and men, you know, being compassionate towards women, we don't have that anymore. We really don't. Even Chris Brown, like, all he does, he may be singing about love and, you know, a woman, but it's basically all sex, it's all exploitation. It's just not the same. And, like, where we used to play with Beanie Babies and, you know, like, My Size Barbies and Barbies, they don't have that anymore. They have, like, technology, which I think is, like, killing the generation because nobody even wants to go to school anymore. Everybody just wants to be famous. You know what I'm saying? And I've been to college. This is what some, you know, a lot of people don't think about me. Like, I have been to college. I went to I went to school for broadcast journalism. So this television is a platform, and radio and all this stuff is a platform to get to where I want to be, which is like Lala or Roxy. Like, they're VJs, you know, 106 and Park, like their hosts, you know, Terrence J hosting red carpet events. You know, that's what I want, and you can't really get anywhere without an education. So, yeah, school is important, and I just feel like this generation have lost, you know, what's really important, which is love and education. It's just not there no more.
Now, Judy, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
I know you deal with this a lot. Like, is those guys, can you, these guys online, I know they're extremely thirsty. Have you ever decided to put them on blast for being thirsty? Because I know you get them thirsty guys every day telling you something, right?
I do, but you know what? Sometimes I screenshot it and put it up, not their name or number or anything, because I'm not a snitch.
They give you their number online?
Oh, yeah, like DMs, Instagram, like straight up under the comments, like call me, like all this, like, yeah. But I don't, you know, blast them and stuff. Like, I just show them love back because I'm really not a mean person. But I could if I wanted to.
I don't get that. It's like, you know, it's like, just say hello, hi, go about your business. Why you got to be, you know, so thirsty? Now, Judy, let me ask you about your website. Have a website. What's the name of it?
It's sojudij.com, sojudijai.com. And on the website, I actually have an online boutique. It's called The Vixen Shop. And back in my season of New Orleans and Love Games and stuff, I sold T-shirts. But this time around, I sold beanies as well as sweatshirts, T-shirts. I had a lipstick last year. I'm actually working on a new lipstick because the one last year, you know, you got to be careful with who you do business with. Pretty much this woman was collecting all of my income to make her product, but none of my fans was getting there. So this time around, with my T-shirts, my hats, and my beanies, I took, you know, my work in complete control, and I'm mailing out stuff personally. So all my fans are really happy. They got their stuff, and I have a new beanie design that's dropping this week as well, because actually my beanies and sweatshirts sold out like 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
like
good.
Completely
that's
sold
good.
Out. Yeah. So
well,
I'm
see,
doing a new
good.
Beanie design.
It's yes. good that you have expanded yourself outside of just the Bad Girls Club, because some people just had a time on TV and then you don't hear about them no more, but you're actually taking advantage of the exposure, advantage of, you know, your time on television and making something out of it, you know, good, you know, positive, doing appearances, doing interviews, keeping your name out there. I see that you are engaging with your fans.
Yes,
which is, you know,
all the
awesome
time. I feel like you wouldn't be nothing, you know, without them. So I love them, and I make sure to talk to them every day. Like, and on Instagram, sometimes, you know, I go to other celebrities' pages and stuff and see their fans just commenting, you know, about how much they love them, and they never write them back. And I just personally would never be able to live myself if I just let these people talk to themselves all day. You know what I'm saying? That's not cool. That's not right. Like, these people love you. Like, you should show love back, and that's just how I'm going about it. So, I don't know. It makes people happy, and I like being happy, so.
Especially since, I mean, fame is fleeting, so it's important to show people love because, I mean, I'm not going to say I have a fan base, but I do have a lot of, like, I do have a certain number of people that follow me, and I feel that out of respect, it's just a nice thing to do to just, if someone says, I like your picture, just say thank you. I don't
yeah,
see how
you
people
know,
feel like they're all high and mighty. It's like, oh, I can't reply to you. I'm so-and-so. You know?
Yeah, and that sucks because, like, what happens when they stop, you know, commenting? And what happens when they stop caring? Like, you're going to feel like an asshole. But that's karma. Like, you should just, you know, get that back because you ignored them, so now they're ignoring you. So it's like, it's just all about, you know, being positive and being a good person. I truly, firmly believe in being a good person.
Mm-hmm. And so what is your advice to somebody who wants to kind of sort of do what you do? Because I see a lot of girls, they see women like the video vixens and women in entertainment. And, like, I mean, I've seen young girls that are, like, 13, 14 years old posting half-naked pictures all over Twitter thinking that that's how they get put on.
No. See, okay, my advice, actually, you know, I've done some magazines. Like, I will say my fourth magazine comes out this month, and the pictures are, you know, a little risque, but I've never been naked, and I never will do stuff like porn or anything like that, because what they need to know is once those type of pictures and once you put yourself out there like that, there's no coming back, you know, and unfortunately, they're following the wrong people. Like, if they, you know, search deeply into it, girls who do stuff like that don't really get far. Yeah, sex does sell, but at the end of the day, if you want a business or a company to take you seriously, you got to cover up. You know, and I'm even learning that. I'm 24, and I'm still learning that. Like, you know, trying to switch up my style a little bit. Like, it's very, very professional, and at the same time, you get more respect being less risque, you know, than being risque. So my advice is to, one, be yourself. So if that's you and if that's what you like to do, by any means, do it. Don't change. But, you know, you need to be a little more respectful towards yourself, because if you don't respect yourself, nobody in the industry will. And let me tell you, there's a million naked girls out here. Well, one girl won't do, another one will. So be different. You know, be different. It's not about being naked or being pretty or being, you know, showing your butt or, like, having sex. It's not about that. It's honestly about being different. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The industry changes all the time. Right now the industry is porn, you know, strippers, twerkers, all that. But I promise you the industry is going to change again. Time always changes. So be careful what you do, because once it's out there, it's out there. And I just think you should be different. Focus on being different.
And the thing is, you know, like I said, you have younger girls looking up to you, for example. You know, I told my daughter, say, hey, Judy from Bad Girls Club New Orleans will come on the show. She's like, oh, really? I like Judy. You know, she's my favorite or whatever, and she's 11. She
yeah,
likes you.
Yeah, see,
okay.
That's,
so
yes,
if you do
like,
something
I love
like that,
that. I
if
really,
you do
really love
like
that.
That, then
so
it influence her.
And I love her, too. But I was going to say, like, that's the thing. See, I think on my season, New Orleans, even though I was drunk and crazy, well, actually, on all of my shows, I'm drunk and crazy, because I am drunk and crazy, but the one thing that they did show was my heart and, like, that I am a good person and that, you know, I am not a bad person, even though sometimes I get drunk and act crazy. At the end of the day, I'm just Judy. And, you know, when I get tweets of little kids making their own voodoo dolls and stuff like that, that's important to me. You know what I'm saying? That makes me more happy than a rapper hitting me up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I
yeah.
just feel like, and I'm still learning to this day, like I said, my Twitter sometimes is so, like, crazy and, like, ratchet, but I am crazy and ratchet. So it's like, at the same time, I don't want to change who people fell in love with. But at the end of the day, I realize that I do have a lot of people, you know, looking up to me and, you know, rooting mm-hmm. for me. And I want to make sure that they know, just because I act drunk and get crazy, that doesn't mean that y'all have to. And if me, you know, bettering myself is going to help y'all, you know, motivate y'all to better yourselves, then that's what I'm going to do.
Exactly. So, you know,
yes.
Miss Judy, let me ask you a question before we get to the calls. What do you have going on in the future? What do we expect to see from you?
Well, I moved to Atlanta because actually I've been having meetings with Tyler Perry. You know, I really want to get involved in more acting. My first movie actually dropped in August, at the end of August. It was called Ravens Cravens, a Baltimore love thing. It played in major movie theaters in the DMV, so it really was in theaters. It's going to come out to DVD. I think I did really good. The event was wonderful. I really have a passion for music, acting, film, drawing, all of that. So I did move to Atlanta because, you know, it's like the Black Hollywood. They're building a Paramount Pictures down there. Plus, property is, like, way cheaper there in L.A. And plus, you know, I love my little Southern ratchet hip-hop, you know. So I felt like that was perfect for me. So I have been having meetings with Tyler Perry to do more films. I also did a short role in another movie that's coming out. I can't really say anything yet because the trailer isn't even out yet, you know, like by contracts and stuff. But
yeah.
also, I do music. My third song dropped 2 weeks ago. It was called My Zone. And I'm actually trying to get into more, because a lot of people don't know this about me, but I can draw. I can really, really draw. So, and my voice is really unique. Like, I could act crazy and stuff. So I want to get into voiceovers, like Disney, like cartoons. You know, like how Eddie Murphy
mm-hmm.
was the little firefly in Mulan or whatever, the grasshopper
uh-huh.
or whatever. I think that's something that I would really enjoy. And once again, it has, you know, to do with magic. And, you know, I'm a big, you know, I love, like, magical stuff and kids, once again. So that's something that people can enjoy my craziness for what it really is and not just the drunk crazy, you know? So
yeah.
I definitely am working in a lot of other stuff. And like I said, you guys will definitely see me on television again. But once again, I can't talk about, you know, too much of that either.
Yeah, I understand that. So, Miss Judy, what we're going to do is we're going to let the five calls in that we, you know, talked about before, and we'll announce your area code, and you can ask Judy whatever you want. So let me see. I try to do it based on who is sitting on the line longer than anybody. So here we go. This person is sitting here for 31 minutes waiting.
Okay.
Area code 817. You're on the show.
Hello.
Yes, hello, area code 817, how you doing? Hello? I guess they're not answering. Let's go to the next caller. Judy got things to do.
Okay.
Area code 253, you on the show?
Hi.
Yes, hello, how you doing?
Hello?
Hi, how
yes.
are you?
All right, Judy.
Yes, it's Judy.
Oh, my gosh.
How
oh
are you?
God.
What's your name?
My name is James.
Nice to meet you, James. I love you.
I love you, too. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you sound so cute. I wish we were turning up.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know what to ask you. I didn't think you were going to actually answer or whatever, but...
calm down, James. It's all right, James.
On Battle for Battle, like, was it hard, like, the challenges and stuff?
You know what? I would say the challenges weren't so much hard. Now that I look back at it, I just didn't have enough confidence, and I used to get really, really nervous and let my anxiety mess me up. But the hardest part about All-Star Battle to me was mm-hmm. trying to play the game fair. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I didn't want to backstab anybody. I could have easily a ton of times broken my alliance or, you know, went back on my word, but your word is your bond. So the hardest part of All-Star Battle is trying to play the game fairly, because at any time, like, it can come back on you and, you know, get you in the butt. So that's the hardest part, trying to remain, you know, the best person you can be and not do anybody bogus.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, my gosh.
I love you so much, James.
I love you, too.
Make sure you tweet me.
You're welcome.
And thank you, James, for calling the show.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay, let's see. We're going to go to, let me see who else been sitting on the line for a long time. Okay, yeah, they've been sitting a while. Eric Cole, 586, you're on the show.
Hello, hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Judy. This is Giovanni Minaj on Twitter. How are you?
I love you, Giovanni Minaj.
Oh, my God.
I see you all the time. You know I follow
you.
I like that.
Yes, Judy, I love you. I just want to say I don't really have a question. I just wish you the good and best of luck. I mean, you're a good person, and I loved you on your season of Bad Girls Club. Like you said, you are crazy, and I just love that about you. There's just something very special about you that I really love.
You know what? That makes me really happy, because sometimes I always, like, I don't think people know, like, I do sit by myself sometimes and think, you know, about things a little too hard, but I really do appreciate that, and you really did just put a smile on my face and make my day. And I love you so much for loving me, because I'm me. You know, I can't change, and I've tried, but I love you so, so much.
I love
you
so much.
Thank
you
for
riding
with me.
You're welcome. Love you.
Love you, babe. All
right. Thank you for calling the show. Okay, let's see, Judy. It'll be call number three here. We're coming in two. And area code 832, you're on the show.
Judy?
Hey.
This is Mimi from Twitter.
Hi, Mimi from Twitter.
Yeah, I'm like one of your biggest fans.
I love you. Thank you so much for supporting me. I really appreciate it.
I just wanted to know, like, when do you think you would ever come back on Bad Girls Club?
Well, I'll be on Oxygen for a long time, and I definitely will be back on television in 2014. So that's pretty much all I can say, but Oxygen ain't getting rid of me yet, and I'm not done with Oxygen or my television stuff yet. So you'll see me again really soon.
Okay.
I love you.
Love you, too.
All right. Thank you for calling the show. Let's see, Miss Judy. We'll go to the – let me see who's been sitting here longer. Okay, this area code. Area code 310, you're on the show. Erico 310? Okay, you're not answering. We've got to move on. Let's see here. Erico 414, you're on the show.
Hello?
Hey.
Oh, my God. I'm sitting here fucking eating pizza. I'm just listening. I didn't think that was
that. I love pizza. What type of pizza are you eating?
Dude, I went ham, me and my bro. Bro, why I'm talking to Judy, bro? Come here. Turn up. Like, the turn is real. Anyway, I got pepperoni, sausage and shit, onions. He got, like, pineapples and nasty stuff, but.
You know I love to eat. I think I'm about to order a pizza after this interview, because that sounds fast.
Dude, you do be going ham, too. Like, you really do. I'd be like, dude, no, she a model. What's she doing?
I love food. That's actually one of my favorite things next to alcohol, food, for sure.
Wow.
Judy, what kind of vodka you drink, Judy?
I love Ciroc and Goose. Like,
Ciroc.
It's crazy. Like, Ciroc turns me into Waka Flocka, but Goose gets me loose. So it's definitely, like, two, you know, extremes. But I love vodka, period.
My Sloan.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, love.
Yes.
Oh, I'm Sloan. Shit. I'm like, that's how I hung up on me.
No, we didn't hang
like
up.
That. No, we didn't hang up, but I want to thank you for calling the show and speaking to Judy, because we got to move on to another caller. Cause
I love you, baby.
Love you too, boo.
All right, let's see here, because this person been sitting here 33 minutes, so let's see about them getting in. Erico 419, you on the show?
I'm on the show.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you are.
Oh my gosh, I'm on the show. I'm sitting at work and I am on the show.
Turn up.
Yeah. Turn up at work. The turn up is real.
And get that money. Money. Yes, get that money.
Oh my gosh, I love Judy. Judy, this is BenJack11 from Twitter. I'm so mad I did not get to see you last weekend in Bowling Green.
Oh my God, but you know what? I'll be coming back to Kentucky soon. I come to Kentucky a lot, so you'll definitely get to meet me and turn up with me.
No, when are you coming back to Columbus?
To where?
Columbus.
Columbus? As soon as the party promoter books me, I'll be there. I love Ohio and Kentucky. You know, got to sell love to the Midwest. I love it.
Oh my God, I'm sorry I got to talk to you, but I'm at work bringing up.
I love you so much.
I love you too.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for calling,
bye,
sir. All right, Miss Judy. That's the you said you had time for 5 callers.
We
could do one more. Okay, let's see here. This person is sitting here for about 30 minutes, so let's see if we can get with them. Area code 612. You on the show?
Hello.
Hey, 612.
Hi, Judy.
How are you?
Good. I love you. Oh my goodness.
I love you too. What's your name?
Dominique.
Nice to meet you, Dominique. I love you.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I was over here crossing my fingers. Oh, my goodness.
Wishes come true. I love you so much. I'm happy you called.
You're welcome.
Do you have a question?
No, I just hope you get in with Tyler Perry and, yeah.
And win. Pray for me to something. Just pray for me.
I will. I love Tyler Perry and I love you. You deserve it.
I love you so much, too. Thank you so much, and that really means a lot.
Okay.
Bye, baby.
Bye.
Thank you for calling the show. All right, Judy, like I said, that's all the calls that you're willing to take, and I know you got a lot of things to do. So anything you want to say before you have to go on and, you know, do what Judy has
crazy.
To do? Yeah, be
yes,
crazy.
I wanted
get
to
turned
just say,
up.
Yes, thank you guys so much for having me on your show. Like I said, y'all have a huge following, and I wish y'all the best. I really believe in y'all, and y'all are awesome. And I want to say thank you for everybody who called in tonight. Like, I love you guys. It really, really does mean a lot. One thing about me is I'll never change or, you know, change the person who I am for the worse. It's just going to get for the better. And I love you guys, and thank you guys so much for the support.
Okay, well, thank you, Judy, like I said, for taking time out to join us with the show. I know all your fans that spoke to you, you know, they sound like they just love you to death.
And I love you guys, and I love everybody. Make sure that you tweet me the link to this so I can put it up on my YouTube, too.
Okay, I sure will.
Okay, y'all. I love y'all. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you,
Judy. You're very welcome. Thanks for
coming
on.
Okay, bye, y'all. Have a good night, and turn up.
All right, Judy, turn up. So that was Judy, everybody, from Bad Girls Club. She was definitely, you know, being Judy. I mean, she what you see is just what you get. And Ms. Gabriella, did you enjoy that particular interview?
Oh, yeah, I did. What I really like is that she kind of reminded me of myself because you see, I mean, you don't be commenting on my stuff on Facebook, but because I think you think you're too good. But
wait, back up. Who too good for what?
You don't be commenting on my Facebook.
Girl, I don't be commenting on my own YouTube channel half of the time.
Anyway, I like the fact that she's real and she's really just being herself. It's not like she's being a character or trying to be something that she's not. I think that's something that you don't really find nowadays. Everybody's just trying to be the next person. So I really admire that about her.
Yeah, she took advantage. Like I said, she's taking advantage of her time. A lot of people, you know, have those opportunities. They do not take advantage of it. And then you look up, it's like, why are you working at Walmart? And you was on TV a few years ago. I mean, you don't take advantage of that exposure. I mean, it's kind of on the individual, too. I mean, you know, you got to respect that Judy a hustler. She's hustling. She's doing her thing. She, you know, making her money. You know, it's all you can do is respect that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because they got, you know, certain girls that been on the same show that she's been on. You don't hear nothing about them anymore but her. She's, you know, keeping herself relevant no matter how she's doing it. you know, and her personality is pretty cool. I mean, you seem like cool people. You're like, hey, you know, let's go hang out with Judy, too. You can laugh with her. I mean, just based off of just how she's coming across even on this show. So I understand why people, you know, like her and, you know, want to be chill with her. So anybody want to get involved with reality TV or whatever, Judy kind of told you the process. If you want to get on Bad Girls Club or you think that you can handle it and handle the environment, well, Judy should be the person to talk to. So let's get to the other portion of the show. We're talking about the topic of the double standards in the American media. Now, Ms. Gabriella, what is your opinion on that?
I mean, I didn't even get a chance to watch the trailer today. I'm gonna be completely honest.
Well, does it,
so, like, what do you mean by the double standard in the media?
Well, what I mean by double standards is, you know, you have different events that happen. I'll give you an example. You'll have an event like the shooting that was at the movie theater, and in the media they say that guy, oh, he had a mental condition, he had a problem, and, you know, show sympathy for him. But you have somebody who does the same things, literally, let's say like Chris Dorner in the LAPD. He was doing what he was doing. Oh, you know, he's evil. He's a criminal. He's a monster. He shouldn't be doing that. You get what I'm saying? Like the double standard that's within the media. Or, for instance, let's say like if a black girl, she's twerking, oh, she's a whore, she's a slut, she's nasty. But
so
if
Miley do it, does
if
it,
Miley do it,
it's
cute.
Cheap and it's edgy.
And it's cheap, it's ugly, it's cute. It's just risky. It's, you know, having fun. It's a new dance. I mean, you know what I'm saying? The double standard that goes on in the media, in this particular double standard, actually push more of a divide between everybody, you know, that go on. And, you know, the media, what people don't realize, shape, you know, the opinion of everybody if they don't really watch, you know, what and how they do this. Now, why do you think, you know, Ms. Gabriella, that, you know, if they say, let's talk about the twerking thing, if the black girl twerks, you know, it's nasty, and Miley does it, the same exact thing the black girl is doing, you know, nothing no different. Why do you think the media say that's okay?
I mean, that's a really strange question, because to be honest with you, I don't really think that Miley should be twerking. She, I mean, I know you've seen those memes and pictures where they say that she, her body looked like the, a raw chicken.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
I'm not trying to start old fights with Miley, but I'm just saying, it's not for everybody. I kind of agree with you when you say that twerking is really for the strip club in the bedroom. I don't think that it's something that you should do all the time. I mean, there's nothing wrong with going out and shaking it and having a good time, but there is an extent, and there's a line that does get crossed. And it's strange that that kind of behavior is okay for her. Like, okay, she can do drugs. She can hang out with, she can hang out with this rapper and that rapper, and it's cute. But if, let's say, if there was a black girl that was doing the same thing, they would say that
she's
ratchet.
Okay, example. Let's say Kelly Rowland. Let's use her. If Kelly Rowland was to do the exact same thing as Miley, okay, I mean, verbatim, rappers, everything, they
drugs
would trash. Yeah, drugs. They would trash Kelly. Oh, what happened to Kelly? She was in Destiny's Child. She didn't have no problems. Now she's being with these old thug rappers, she'd be a slut, and she wouldn't be able to get no play at all. Kelly's career would be basically ended. You know what I'm saying? But versus Miley, she's being put up on everything. Everybody's talking about her. I mean, she is just like reinventing herself from, you know, a wholesome image that her dad helped her to get, you know, the Hannah Montana thing, to now she's doing what she's doing, and nobody's condemning her for it. And I'm going to tell you what else would happen to Miley. Miley can turn around and revamp her image to something positive again, and she'll still be accepted. They won't even bring up that she was twerking and doing what she was doing to Robin Thicke on national television, a married man at that. They won't even bring it back up. But if, let's say, if a Beyonce did it, or, like I said, any other black woman, they'd have done it, their career would be finished. And this is the double standard that, you know, one of the double standards in the media.
I actually think that that sort of thing was planned, because one of my friends pointed out to me that it was weird that all these rappers were making songs talking about Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus and all this. And, I mean, some of their lyrics, they actually said her name. They were like, they just kept saying Hannah Montana over and over. And that was just in one rapper's song. And they were talking about the kind of things that she was going to do. And then all of a sudden, he just ratchet Miley. And so I think that the reason why this sort of thing is considered acceptable is because they planned for her to do this. They wanted I mean, this is what a lot of celebrities do to change their image if they want to. I mean, if you look at people like, I wouldn't use Britney, well, maybe Britney Spears, for example, or people like Christina Aguilera or whatever celebrity, Angelina Jolie, they all have, like, this phase where they just do this hypersexual, just way wild, out-of-control image, and then they come back and they start doing charity work and they start, you know, they adopt a bunch of kids and then they have a baby and then they start showing their weight loss photos and blah, blah, blah. And then their whole image is just completely changed. And so I already know what's going to happen soon is that, you know, Miley's going to be like, oh, I had an epiphany. I wasn't being myself. I'm going to go to Africa and take some pictures with some children and then turn around and come back the next day when I really don't care about the kids. I'm just doing this for my image. And then, you know, and then everybody's going to say, oh, she's sweet innocent Hannah Montana again.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was talking about. You know, I want to get into some more aspects of this, you know, particular double standard. And, you know, because as I do these news stories daily, you know, on the YouTube channel, you see the differences. I mean, you see the major differences, how the news cover maybe one group or cover women or cover even something that has to do with, you know, gay people or people that's low income versus those who have money. I mean, they definitely make a difference. Let me see. I got three calls on here. Let me see if they want to add anything to it. Eric Cole, 586, you're on the show.
Well, I'm still online. Hello?
Yeah, you still on the line? Are you got anything to add to the show? Or are you just listening?
Well, the only thing I want to say is, you know, Miley, I mean, I like her. I don't have no problem with her at all. But I think everyone just needs to leave her alone. You know, let her do her. I mean, she started off at a young age. So, you know, now she's getting older. So she's adventuring to new things. So I just think they just need to leave the whole situation alone. That's how I look at it.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. Since, you know, they say Miley doing the twerking, whatever. Me, I don't. Miley, she grown, she do what she want to do. That's my attitude. But
right.
The thing is, Miley do it, it's okay. But let's say if, you know, Rihanna would do the exact same thing, let's say that Miley did, do you think that the reception would be the same?
Well, actually, they don't look at it the same. People look at it different because it's a white girl twerking, you know, and if you see a black person, it's like, oh, my God, this and this and this and that. But when a white person does it, you know, it's all cool. So, you know, people think.
And do you think that's right? Because they both do the exact same thing.
No, I don't think it's right at all. I don't think it's right at all because we're all human. Everything, you know, we're all human. So what is there different about it? Just the skin? That's nothing.
Exactly, and that's you know, that's how I look at it. I don't think it's right. I mean, if you're going to be, you know, right, self-righteous, then go ahead and condemn everybody. Don't just condemn one and just say it's slutty
right.
for one, but it's okay, you know, for the other.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, that's a lot of cases, not just that. It comes to crimes, you know, that go on. Like, say, for instance, if you have, we was talking about, like, for instance, the Boston bombing or you talk about the guy that shot the people in the movie theater in Colorado, you know, he got a mental condition. Oh, every time
he couldn't help it.
You know, a white male does something, he got a mental condition. But when a black guy does it, he's just evil. He needs to go to jail. Throw away the key. I mean, have you noticed that?
No, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, the media just pushed a lot of that. But like I said, I appreciate you calling in. I got some more callers I wanted to get up on the line. But thank you. Eric Cole, 703, you're on the show. 703?
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Were you on the show?
What? I'm actually on here. Oh, my God.
What did you say?
She's just happy to be on here.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear it. What's your name?
Alex.
Oh, how you doing, Alex? What do you like to add to the show with the topic?
I was just listening, but I'm just like, what?
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking, like I said, you listen anyway, say we just talking about the double standards in the media. I mean, have you noticed anything different? How, you know, one, like we were talking about Miley, for instance, with the twerking versus, let's say, a black girl would do it. You know, let's say like Rihanna, for instance, she would do the exact same thing Miley did at the MTV Awards. Do you think Rihanna would be, you know, received the same way than Miley? Okay, well, I guess she lost a call there. Let's see who got sitting here. Area code 901, you on the show. Area code 901? Okay, Ms. Gabrielle, we're going to move on from that one.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Hold on. Area code 713, you on the show. Whoa, what's going on? Area code 713, you on the show. Guess they're not answering. Let me see, I got another call.
She is going. But I was just thinking about how much flack that little mama got when she jumped on the stage I think it was Jay-Z and Alicia Keys when she was, you know, she said she was just feeling the music and she just got on stage and just wanted to be a part of the performance. And she got so much backlash that she wasn't really doing much of anything for a long time.
Yeah,
and
you ain't lying.
It's strange that, you know, I mean, what she did was kind of funny, but at the same time, I don't think that she should have gotten that much flack for it. But it was nothing. You know, you can't compare that to like shaking your butt half naked on stage in front of children.
Hold on, hey brother McSwain, you're on the show.
Hey, what's going on, Vaso?
Oh, what's going on? How you making it?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just listening to this program about the double standards. You know, like if our people did something, it's like the sin of a mutter, you know?
Exactly. And like, thing is, the media, like, you know, the thing is, the media is the one that really, you know, do this. I mean, we can't say it's, you know, racist Klan members who's in control of this and control of that. You know, it's your everyday people who go to college, who have the education, who mm-hmm. run these multi-million-dollar and billion-dollar media outlets, but yet they make sure that you notice they all push the same agenda. Like, they all following the script. And, you know, it's not so much your local news that I notice that does this a lot. Every once in a while the local news do, but, you know, some of your, like your MSNBC can do it. Definitely Fox News Channel does it. I mean, we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your radio personalities can do it, like, you know, your Rush Limbaughs. And the thing is, what people don't understand is that a lot of people listen to these people and they shape their thinking, you know, when it comes to the perception of other people. That's why when it comes to Bill O'Reilly, okay, if Bill O'Reilly says something outlandish and I know about it, I will talk about it. I will do a video about it because some of the things Bill O'Reilly say is just really, you know, off the wall.
Yeah, it's just like that no one lets you know about this. In any war, you need an enemy. You know, like propaganda is the first thing. Media, like we're the ones that been mocked, vilified, and stuff. And I'm feeling the indirect things of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Even though I don't partake in a stereotypical way, but I'm still being, you know, decent brothers and sisters being felt in this indirect sting. Oh, I thought every black person was a criminal. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I bet you felt that too. You know what I mean? When you're working or when you get pulled over by the police, you know, like, it's like everybody's coming against us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know, even when the current case that we have right now with Renisha McBride, you know, like when I originally did the video, okay, before it came out, I just knew that, you know, he was white. I knew it based on how the media covered it up. They didn't want to show his face. They didn't want to talk about, you know, his name, nothing. Now it came out, he's a 54-year-old white male. It came out. And when I first said that, I had people coming at me, not black folks. Well, some white people that had an issue with it. Why are you saying he's white? Why are you saying this? Why are you saying that? I said, it's not because I'm just making it up. The thing is, the media has patterns to how they do things, how they conceal things. When there's a black person that does something similar to that, they're blasted all over the evening news. I mean, their face, who their mama is, and their daddy, and where they work, and their kids, and nothing's, you know, concealed about that individual. So that's what led me to say what I said. And once again, I was right.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, like white people can do things, they can hide in the dark, but when we do something, it's like, oh my God, it's the greatest thing since the Fukushima bomb. You know what I mean? It's like, we gotta understand this is not our country. You know what I mean? This is, we.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I have to disagree with that. This is our country because our ancestors, you know, were here and they worked this land and helped build this country. So I would never say this is not our country. I'm sorry. My ancestors are not going to build up this country and we just walk away and say, forget it. You know, let everybody else enjoy it when our ancestors' blood, sweat, and tears literally built this land. So, no, I can't say that. But my thing is, you know, we all need to be together on things. It's just one people group. But what people don't understand is that the rich people don't care about nobody. They really don't. They want
you always say, it's not about black and white. It's about rich and poor.
Yeah, it's about rich and poor. And the thing is, you got to understand, the rich owns the media. They own it. So the best way for the rich to stay in power is to use division. Either use it with racial division, use it with financial, use it about sexual orientation and religion and all this other stuff, because we are the ones that feed them. They don't really feed us. Because if we got to a point, let's say we said, you know what, forget Walmart. Nobody is going to shop in Walmart, and everybody's stuck to it. Walmart will fall because it's us that's feeding them. So the powers that be make sure they get their agendas pushed with the media. They put, you know, their money in these politicians to get things done that they want to do. And, you know, but they make sure with this double standard, they, you know, let people see that, hey, you know what? You know, one group is better than the other one, and it just makes, you know, people just can't get together.
It's just like people will vote against their own economic interests.
You know, I had one person on my YouTube was telling me, and I'm going to read it, because they act like I'm afraid to address that. They're talking about, well, what about you mentioning, you know, those on the when I mentioned O'Reilly, Hannity, and when I mentioned Bill O'Reilly. And they said that, well, you know, why I don't want to talk about Reverend Al Sharpton, his rhetoric is dangerous. How? That's what I want to know. How Al Sharpton's rhetoric is dangerous.
I'm actually doing a report. I don't want to really stray too far off a topic, but I am doing a report on the corruption in the NAACP and organizations like that. And there is proof that, I mean, I have to write a 20-page paper on this. And so I've been doing a lot of digging. There's evidence of bribes. There's a reason why a lot of people call, like, people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and all them poverty pimps, because they're sitting around basically taking all this money, and the people that follow them, the people that really are wanting them to do something for the black community, aren't really benefiting. Because if they have enough money backing them, like, if they really wanted to go into neighborhoods like, let's say, Chicago and clean it out completely, they could. If they wanted to really do what they needed to do to help the black community and make and completely change the image of black culture, get it back to the way that it was in the 60s, then they could. But it's not like that anymore.
They could to a point. You're right. They could. They do have the media presence, and anywhere they go, people show up. I agree with you on that. They could do a whole lot more. But in this day and time, I don't think we need a leader for that one thing you said just now. Because when you get a leader, he becomes a target. He becomes a target for corruption, or becomes a target to be taken out, one of the two. And if they can't corrupt you, if they can't, you know, make you, you know, bribe you a little bit,
I mean, the corruption's already there. If you want me to, I mean, there's information. All you got to do is type in corruption, NAACP, corruption, Reverend Al Sharpton. There's been times when he's collected thousands of dollars, and I mean, there's the case where he had a woman accuse somebody of rape, and she didn't really do it, but they both profited off of it. So it's like you have to really be careful as to who you follow, because yes, they may present the image like, oh, I'm trying to help the black community. But when you really do some digging, you're going to be surprised.
Yeah, well, like I said, I never said that, you know, hey, let's go follow Al Sharpton and everything he says. Let's go follow Jesse Jackson and everything he says. No, because I think they can do a whole lot more. In my opinion, Jesse Jackson, he has been kind of like a failure, because how is it that you were with Dr. King of all people and don't carry that legacy on to, you know, to make his message even greater? You get what I'm saying?
Well,
I mean, that's my position on that. But once again, I say we do not need leaders at all. We need just, you know, people that's going to push the traditional family values, people that's going to, you know, try to bring us back to once how we once were, like you said, in the 60s, 50s, et cetera. But let me get to this particular. I got some calls sitting on here, so they want to get in. Let's see here. Erico 419, you on the show.
That's why I went back to ask. I'm a machine right there.
Erico 419?
Oh, I was on the radio. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear Ms. Gabriella?
Yeah, I hear. I don't think that they're aware. Or
I don't know. I'm about to move on to the next call because I can't hear them.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, Erico 323, you on the show.
Yeah, I didn't know because, I don't know, sometimes Skype changes up the numbers, but there's like never a shortage of somebody who's willing to play the role for the money. You know what I'm saying? They say that your job, you get paid according to what job you solve. Get what I mean? Like, so if you're a fast food worker, you get paid X amount because, you know, those people are disposable, so to speak, right? And so the higher up, so what problem are they solving when they're paying these people, these rappers and these industry people? They're paying them a lot of money, but what job are they solving? They're doing it to keep their own people down. So it's like when you have these Wiz Khalifas and all they talk about is smoking weed, this, that, and the third, it's like they keep on bombarding the youth, and you know you only have a certain amount of time in order to, like, get in where you fit in. Because after high school, if you don't necessarily go to college, if you have the mindset thinking that, okay, I'll just get a job and this job will be suffice for this world, you have a rude awakening. And so what can you do after that point? Try to play catch-up? But you're trying to play catch-up when the deck is stacked against you. And so it's kind of like after that, you have to make a living. And then when you see that there's not many options, then what do you do? Then you start opting out, well, look, I got to survive. So what, you try to sell drugs? Then you get caught up in the system even further, because now – if you get put behind bars, they got this thing that's called convict leasing. Now, convict leasing is slavery, too. You know what I'm saying? That's modern-day slavery. And then, let me stop, but what I'm trying to say is basically that whole thing of who they're paying, like if one person says, you know what, they realize, oh, I'm not going to I'm gonna stop corrupting my people like this, they'll just pick one more person out of the barrel who wants to come up. And it's a sad thing, but that's just the way that it is.
So what you're saying is that, you know, even public figures, if they were that one person, let's say, you know what, hey, I'm not taking the deal, whatever, I'm for my people, I'm going to do what's right, you feel somebody else will just come behind and take it.
It always happens. It always happens. And then the ones who do try to, like, make a stand or whatever, they get taken out because they're not playing by the rules. And I'm not trying to make it a racial thing. But it is a caste system still. I mean, even in America, it may not seem like that, but it's very subtle. It's a caste system being put in service, being put in place. And the people, let's say you have a comfortable living, but, you know, you might be suburban or whatever like that, and you're happy with your lot in life. So, you know, you do what you do for your family and this, that, and the third. But let's say the people who are really struggling in the poverty situations, it's like, maybe you don't have a whole bunch of extra crumbs to give to them, or maybe there's just not enough time in the day for you to put towards that. And it's like, so that's where they're born. You know what I mean? If you're born there, you can still be a good person. But if you have no resources, I mean, what do you do? You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, who don't have resources?
Well, let's say you're born. You don't have a choice in the matter. If you're born into a family that might be, let's say, in the projects or something like that, you still might want to be good, right? But, like, the area around you, just you getting home from school. I seen a video clip from a kid that goes to school in Chicago, and he was talking about he races home to get there as fast as he can because X amount of things might happen to him. And that, just to think about that alone, I don't want to get off topic, but what I'm trying to say is they have so many other things on their platter that they have to think about outside of just school alone. So you're already distracted, and then you got the peer pressure of trying to fit in and all that kind of thing, and that's really another issue all in of itself. But they love the cool fool, you know what I'm saying? And it takes a while to wake up. Catch-up game, that is really hard. That catch-up game, even though you try, let's say you say, oh, man, it's dawning on me. I don't really care about this materialistic stuff anymore. But now what? How old are you when you find that out? You know what I'm saying? You still got to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to pay
let me ask something. What is it about Al Sharpton that conservatives do not like? What is it, in your opinion, that he talks about issues that deal with minorities and they don't want to hear it? What is it? Because, I mean, they hate him with a passion. They really do. They hate it. Him and Jesse.
I'm weary of even Jesse and all these people that are still called for us, you know what I mean? Because a lot of times they exploit us just the same. And it's just like, to me, I mean, I don't want to be I like the job that they do when they put the spotlight on them. Let's say they go do something, and it's good for us. But at the same time, I think they're kind of milking, they're exploiting in a way as well. I'm not saying that they could do more because I don't know who they really are. I don't go home with them. I don't know them personally. But a lot of the times, man, a lot of these people, I think they've been selected. You know the thing about COINTELPRO, where they have people who infiltrated like the Black Panthers and things like that. These are our own people. You know, putting a stop to causes that were trying to put us forward. There's always going to be somebody who will say, look, I want to be the house Negro, man. I'm tired of picking this cotton. You know, what you want me to do, master? I'll do it. And they have somebody every single time because the comfort zone is not everybody's willing to grin and bear it for like a little bit of time, to grind a little bit, and then later on, it's always that instant pleasure. And you know what? TV advertisements, they just make us more like that. You get what I'm saying? Have this burger now. Have this steak now. Go get this clothes now. Everything is so fast forward, sped ahead, that people don't want to wait anymore. And if you don't want to wait, then a lot of these things you can't even achieve without time. School takes a certain amount of time. You get what I mean? Degrees take a certain amount of time. And that's just time that people are not willing to take.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely agree with that. Let me see. Hold on. I see somebody else has jumped in. Let me see if that's what they want to get on. Erico 586, I see you back on the line. You got anything to add?
No, I'm just listening right now.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's see here. See if we can jump in. Erico 706, you on the show. You got anything to add?
Hello, this is me.
Excuse me?
Oh, hey, is it about the perception of others, the media?
Yes.
Oh, okay, yes, I feel like the media does kind of affect people in the wrong way sometimes, and like, it really does damage some people's lives, but that's all I have to say.
Okay, all right. Well, definitely. Thank you for that particular opinion. Now, this is the thing that, you know, I'm saying, because we want to talk about, you know, Al, and I'm going to talk about O'Reilly. I'm going to talk about all of them. The fact of the matter is, you know, they are those who get mad at Al. What O'Reilly does, the exact same thing, if you want to go on that particular, like, commentary. Because, like, okay, Al talks about something, like, in reactionary, from what I've noticed. O'Reilly likes to just constantly just put stuff out there to cause issues or stir stuff up. My thing is this. You know O'Reilly really don't care about the Black community like that. Hannity don't care. Limbaugh don't care. My thing is, why don't you talk about your community and fix the issues within your community? Why you got to bring up Black people and what they doing? And what they doing?
Oh, yeah. Like, I've never seen, well, I mean, I'm not a watcher of his, but I haven't seen him issue or discuss the fact that there's a really high number of cases of teen pregnancies in the Midwest, you know, out in the farming areas in America where the poor people in the white community live, there's really nothing else to do but get pregnant in high school. I mean, they barely have internet out there. They barely have TV. And they don't talk about the meth epidemic. They don't talk about anything.
No.
The fact that there's young kids doing heroin, and I mean, I haven't seen that.
No, but
then it's always, it's always the minority youth.
Yeah,
inner city youth. That's what I meant.
Yeah, minorities.
And the urban culture is a bad thing. But I'm like, okay, well, why don't you address teen pregnancy, methamphetamine, and heroin?
Exactly.
I mean, what else? What about welfare? What about welfare fraud? What about all these things? I mean, it's not even the poor. Let's talk about the white collar crimes when there's people in, you know, stealing thousands of dollars from their company. We don't see that sort of thing. It's always just it's the rappers. Those are the ones who are making the whole country bad. That's the reason why gun violence has gone up. Everybody is all the young kids want to be Chief Keef. That's why everybody is running around shooting people.
Yeah. That's all they want to talk about. You know, like I said, they act like, I mean, O'Reilly and Hannity and all them act like that nobody in the white community do anything wrong. It's just all us. And that's the issue. I don't hear Al Sharpton on his show saying, oh, well, you see what all these white people be doing and look the crimes they commit. Look this, look that. Like, they don't do that. They just talk about when racism and stuff happens to us or discrimination happens. That's the difference between Al Sharpton's, you know, language versus Bill O'Reilly's language. Because I'm sorry, if you listen to, you know, O'Reilly, you would think that, hey, man, black people in every city and every nation, it's just the most horrible people on the planet. None of us are good people.
Bathroom's free, man.
Do what? They want to bring up every day, blacks, you know, they're always killing blacks. Wait a minute. White people kill white people every day, too. Hispanics kill Hispanics every day. Asians kill Asians every day. What's your point? It's a human life that's being lost. Every time you bring up these particular things, blacks commit more crimes. And you say, well, we say per capita. Like when you say, well, FBI statistics don't say that blacks are the ones that get arrested the most, actually. White people do. Let's say, we were talking about in a certain area. Okay, if a certain area have more black folks, then, of course, more black folks are going to commit crimes. Whatever is the dominant race in that area, you're going to have, it's a numbers game. I mean, like, why they, like, try to spin that? And this is my thing. They spin that, and then they get people saying, you see how those black people are, those Hispanics, or you see how they are? And it constantly, you know, keep that divide. And that's what I'm talking about, how the media does that. And that's not good for everybody. Because at the end of the day, let's say a big hurricane hit the South right now, Category 5 hurricane, and everything's destroyed. You think somebody's going to really care about, he white, I don't need his help. Oh, he black, I don't need his help. You think they're going to say, you black going to save my kids when you can save them? Come on now. I mean, that's the stuff we're talking about. We got more in common than what we think, and we let the media just keep this divide going on. And that's silly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we need to call them out when they're doing this.
I mean, I've noticed that it's almost like they keep spinning stories so that it does stir up feelings of, like, racial tension, and people start, I don't want to keep, like, beating a dead horse, but the Trayvon Martin case, you saw what happened. And with these new cases of the two black people that just got killed when they were asking for help, at the end of the day, when you really think about it, the only thing that's being accomplished is that it's just putting whites against blacks.
Yeah, because it's like, first it's like...
It's like, blacks are just playing the victim. Oh, well, if they didn't make themselves look bad, then we wouldn't feel threatened by them. And, you know, and then it's like, and then the blacks get up in arms and say, all white people are racist, which is not true. But, you know, it stirs, like, all these kind of stories being put out and being pushed are the reason why there's so much racial tension. And it's just like, we're not going to be able to just drop this whole race issue because it keeps being pushed.
Yeah, and it keeps being put in our face, too.
And it's just a distraction because you've seen all these things that have happened behind the scenes. There's plenty of people that have died that we never heard of. There's kids that are going missing right now. There's, you know, there's things that the Congress has been passing. And, I mean, there's different acts they've been passing. They've been intruding on our privacy. There's been scandals with the government sending weapons to our enemies. There's been so many things going on, but those things get completely looked over because they're pushing stories about, oh, well, let's try to push this story to make white people and black people hate each other a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't see what we're doing. Wow.
Exactly. Exactly. And they pass, like, fans, they talking about, oh, black people in the media, black people steal. Wait a minute. Kent Lay from Enron and Bernie Madoff stole more money than black folks ever stole. But you don't talk about that. Look all the lives they ruined. Just those two guys alone.
They stole billions of dollars.
Billions of dollars. But they'll say, oh, you better worry about that black dude. He going to steal your cell phone or rob the liquor store. He only going to get pennies and get arrested and thrown his behind in jail for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But that's okay. Ken Lay isn't demonized. Bernie Madoff isn't demonized. But you know what? The black thug, at least, because we got thugs in every race. But the black thug, oh, yeah, he's the problem. He is the problem. Hide, like what the old boy say, hide your kids, hide your wife. Here come them Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tavasso.
Yes, sir.
I will say, you know, it's not like you said, it's all about economics. I just feel that, you know, like you said about these double standards in the media, sometimes you got to remember that's a certain generation of our people proving them right every day. You know what I mean? That's a problem, too. How can...
Yes, you can say proving them right. Well, you know what? You can say they got white people proving us right every day to say that some of them are racist. They proving us right every day. Well, should we start saying, well, oh, because you got a few white people proving us right, we going to think that way about the whole group? That's not right. You got people that commit crimes in every single race. Just because they are proven right doesn't mean that the whole group should be demonized in the media, in the national forefront. Just like in Hollywood, for instance, Hollywood isn't diverse. You only think about it. You only got a few actors that who are black or who are Hispanic or whatever. And how is it that you got, you know, most of Hollywood is white, don't give the roles to, you know, equal amount of people, but yet this country is completely diverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they give you stereotypical roles to minorities. They can't be.
Oh, yeah, they got the Latin people being maids and gardeners, and the black people are always loud and obnoxious.
Well, especially the dark-skinned sister. They always want to
make her
their loud, obnoxious woman that, you know, oh, you can't. You know, you can't talk to her. She's belligerent. She's this, she that. So you mean to tell me there's no loud white chicks? There's no belligerent white chicks. I'm sorry. I've lived long enough to see them. They got attitude, too. They ratchet, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, so
but that, even if they do have a character who plays like that whole, I don't want to use a racial term, but that whole rednecky image where they're just real country and jumping in mud pits and all that kind of stuff, those are actually considered, like, I mean, they're actually considered, like, a cool character, you know, a nice, down-home, good American person. But then when they got LaCondria on the show, she's loud, she's rude, she's obnoxious, she's...
You know what I thought about, Ms. Gabriella? Have you seen that movie, The Heat?
The Heat? You know I don't watch American movies.
Okay, well, did you see that movie with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy?
I do not watch American movies.
Okay. Sum it up. Okay. It was very funny. The woman's funny. But the thing is, if it would have been a black woman acting like that, say, oh, well, look at how she acts. That's how black women act. You get what I'm saying? Like, cause she was loud. She was very rude. She was obnoxious. She cussed every 5 minutes, you know, or whatever. And, you know, she was a you know, heavyset lady. But I guarantee they'll be in a black one. They'll cast a dark-skinned one acting like that, head shaking, finger wagging, and then it would have been taken a different way. Even though the movie was funny. I'm not taking nothing away from the movie. But I'm saying, how is it that Melissa McCarthy's character can say, oh, that's so funny, but if a black woman was to play that same...
Oh, that movie's about the fat woman with the... Oh, okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
now.
But if a black woman was to play that exact same role, it wouldn't be as accepted as it would be if, like they say, Melissa McCarthy, you know, played. And she played more than one movie like that. What was that movie, Identity Thief or whatever she played? It was funny. I'm not taking nothing away from her. What I'm saying is that's accepted, but if a minority woman was to do the exact same role, it wouldn't come out the same.
No, it won't. It's just society.
Oh, prime example. I'm glad my wife brought that up. Look at Honey Boo Boo.
Honey Boo Boo.
Look at that right there.
She's funny, though.
Yeah, but
that show is funny. But if they had Lil Shamika on there, if it was called Lil Shamika and Lil Pookie or whatever, or Lil Peaches, you know, it probably wouldn't even got a show.
They wouldn't have got a show. I can promise you, they wouldn't have got a show.
Mhm.
But they are just some very crude people. I mean, raising that kid, you know,
they have
no manners at all, no manners.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, Honey Boo Boo's on TV, you know, and I have no issue with that. But my thing is, if it was a black family doing that, them racist, look at them Negroes, and look how they raise their kids.
It would be a mess.
It would be a mess, and black people be attacking that show, and look how they're showing black people, we need to shut this show down, and we need to go to change.org.
Skip Lois the show.
Do what?
I mean, that was a show. You know, Shorty Lowe didn't even get his show didn't even get greenlit. It did have the Real Housewives, the Baby Mamas of Richmond.
Yeah.
I mean, that show's not even on national TV like that. So, or is it?
It's on local TV in the area. I mean, you can watch it on YouTube.
That's it, though.
If you want to watch
it. It's not on major networks.
No, but this is my thing. It's like, and that's another thing, I'm glad you brought that up. When the shows like that come out, you don't see white people saying, oh, it's making us look bad. They look at themselves like, that's them. They ain't got nothing to do with me. But when we do it as black people, it's like we always got to represent the whole community for everything that we do. Like, how is it that we carry the mantle of the community on any and everything that we do? You are an individual within the community. You maybe happen to be black, but you're an individual. How is it that you're carrying the mantle for all of us? How?
Well, I can say from my experience at Vaso that, like, we're all individuals, but they wanted to put us on a thousand times more in a microscope. You know what I mean? Look what these black people are doing. Oh, my God. We're at war. And it's just crazy, you know?
It's one thing for them to say it or whatever, but we accept it. We accept that.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking on your Facebook page. You were saying the real baby mamas of Timber Creek or Cedar Creek. You know what I mean? Of these poor, trailer park people. You know what I mean?
They wouldn't do it.
They
would, but it would be funny. It would be presented as something cute and funny. It wouldn't be, and then just like you said, it would be, oh, well, That's just them. It's not the whole white community in general.
Yeah, and really, they have the right attitude with it. I mean, really, they do. I mean,
I'm not like the real baby mama of Richmond. I don't have any children, you know.
Wow.
And not every single black woman is loud and disrespectful and having all this drama. Not every black woman is like that. And it's not fair that we get represented. I mean, it's not just black people, it's minorities in general. Every single time I see, I have a lot of friends in the Latin, Latino friends, and we both share the same struggle. They tell me about how, whenever they have a Latin character on the show, they always have like this really thick Spanish accent, or they're gangsters, or they're poor. Like, you never really see them doing anything positive. It's just like the blacks, and it's not fair. Or when you have an Asian, it's always the stereotypical, either they're doing karate or they're playing violin. I'm not going to say that playing violin or karate is a bad thing, but it's not fair how we're kind of like each race is just kind of put in like little different categories, and we can't even branch out from that. But
the thing is, Ms. Gabriella, we allow it, though. That's the thing. We allow it. If we would actually take a stand and say, you're not going to label us as one thing and say this is us or whatever, I mean, that's that individual. I'm sorry. They got black men who do not take care of their kids, black men who are thugs. But I don't care. That's him. They ain't got nothing to do with me. I'm not going to let you label me like that. I'm mm-hmm. not going to let you do it because I am me. I am who I am as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? And like I said, I don't, like I tell people, I don't represent no group. I'm no leader or nothing. So you can't make me responsible for a bunch of people. You just really can't. But in the black community, it's like we want people to lead us. We really, it's like we, I don't know, what is it about us that we just want a leader? We want.
Well, it's because of that slavery mentality, man. Like, we always following the leader. It's like we expect someone to save us from our sins of omerta, you know? Like, and this, you know, like, our people need to start thinking self-preservation instead of looking for this leader to come and save us. How about, you know, like, faith without works is dead, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Exactly. I mean, we shouldn't be looking toward no leader. I agree with you. We don't need a leader. I believe we need a collective mindset, like, that's positive, and that's going to get our families back in line. It's going to push education. It's going to push, you know, business creation. It's going to push all these positive things. But we don't need, you know, somebody to tell us, okay, let all everybody, let's do this. Like, why? Why are we doing
I mean, that? I'm not saying that we need a leader, but I think that if going back to music, if you think about the music that was in the, like, back in the day when rappers were making songs about, you know, things that were happening in their neighborhood and how they wanted to do better, and they made music about love and actual, like, relationships and really having a strong connection with a woman, and instead of singing about, oh, I had sex with 10 girls last night, they were making songs about, you know, I made love to the woman that I care about. And those kind of, like, the stuff that's selling right now is the gangbang and the, you know, the Chief Keef, well, selling drugs and all
that. You can't really say gangbang anymore.
The problem is that, like, the positive music is not even something that the younger generation even cares about. They don't want to listen to anything positive. And
no.
It's like the mindset of the children is completely off. I see little girls, I can look outside my apartment complex right now. There's little girls running the streets, half naked, teaching their little cousins how to twerk, and the little girls don't have any teeth, can barely form a sentence, but they know every little nasty lick me up and down song. They can twerk, they can, I mean, these kids are way out of line.
Well, I mean, you know who making these type of songs, right? It's not us. We don't make the music. It's the people in the big wigs on the top, you know, on the 25th floor. You know, like, a lot of, you know, these songs that these rappers sing, they don't make the song. They're like, it's on the contract. You know, like, sort of, if you tell these rappers, sort of want to develop their own songs, but they can. They're on the contract. Sorry, you must make music to degrade your own people.
Yeah, because they'll tell them, you know, like fans, like I did a story a while back about T.I., and they were saying that Atlantic Records really don't like his positive image. They like when he was talking about, you know, all the drug dealing and the stuff that he would talk about normally in his music, because they don't like him being positive, showing his family, doing things with his family. He said that. He said he knows that. He said it's not good for business. He said it's better when you have, you know, he said hardcore T.I. rapping about all that other stuff. So even T.I. knows that. And that's why, since T.I. is trying to be more positive and trying to show more of a positive image, why his music sales has went down. But I guarantee you, T.I. was to, you know, go back to being extremely negative, his album sales will go right back up. And that's sad. We are the only group of people that we have to be so negative, vile, and, you know, derogatory to sell music. But you have your country music people. They don't make music like that. They talk about, you know, the things that they talk about, their woman leaving them. You know,
the dog died.
The dog dying and all this other stuff they talk about in their music, and they don't disrespect their people, women, or nothing else. And their music sell. Pop music, same way. They don't do anything like that. But leave it up to the rappers and, you know, the R&B artists, it has to be the most overtly sexual, disrespectful, I mean, music to sell. And these artists don't get together and say, you know what? Man, this is not right that we doing this. How is it that you got people like Public Enemy, you know, back in the day that did a lot of conscious-minded music, and they were sold albums. They sold it. No problem.
Think yeah, but kids don't want to listen to that anymore.
Yo, Lil Wayne, think about it. Lil Wayne right now, Lil Wayne, Rick Ross, let's use them too. They could come together and say, you know what? We see all these different issues in society. We're gonna talk about, like, the situation with Trayvon. We're going to talk about the situation with Renisha McBride. We'll make a mixtape. Get it. Because anybody can put out a mixtape. And I guarantee you people would actually buy or listen or download that music from datpiff.com, and those guys would actually have a good influence just rapping about an issue because of their fan base.
I mean, they can, but it's not profitable advice. So
yeah,
it's like they could, but
it all comes down to the bottom line. And at the end of the day, it is all about money. And so why would they want to take time out of their, I mean, I'm not trying to say it's something they should do, but, they might think, well, why would I take all this money or this time out of my busy day to make a record that's not going to profit me? It's not going to help me live my extravagant lifestyle. The only thing it's going to do for me is, I mean, maybe it'll help some kids, but what I'm profiting off of is me throwing on these skinny jeans, stomping on the American flag, and making music that doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's just that, you got to remember also, you forgot to mention these rappers today, they don't get paid that much money. Sir, they get
$1 million. That's the killing part. They don't get paid much money. I mean, actually, they have to go independent or do a whole lot of shows to even get money. So why is it that the label's controlling you that much? They're not even paying you much money at all.
But I guess it's the exposure, maybe?
It's just not just
And don't tell me the labels can't control what you say. Because let me tell you something. When Lil Wayne made that Emmett Till line, the label got at him about it because of the backlash, and he had to get it removed. And he was apologizing for it. So nobody can tell me, well, they just let them say what they want. If they tell them, look, on your next album, you cannot use the N-word, they would have to abide by it. And I guarantee they can make a whole album without that word.
Oh, yes, because
they're under contract.
But they wouldn't want to.
The label wouldn't want to, but think about it. Do you hear a country music singer saying all kind of racist slurs against their own people group? No. Matter of fact, what people group do that other than us? Nobody.
Well, and also, you got to also remember that, if these rappers want to, people say hip-hop's a black business. No, it's not. It's a white-owned business. It's all about economics,
Actually, it's owned by the Jews. It's not even owned
by a white business. That's what I'm talking about, yes.
And that's sad. How is it that, and everything that we dominate in, mostly either white folks or the Jews own it, period. The NBA is all these black folks, but show me how many black owners you have. Same thing with the NFL. Show me the black owners of those teams, but it is predominantly black. So at the end of the day, we still work for somebody else. How is it we dominant in some but yet don't own nothing? Now, recently Diddy came out saying he wanted to be the first, NFL owner. I think he said that. He wants to get a team. Now, I know he's going to go through all kind of stuff trying to do that. Because legal fees,
you gotta go through the fraternity, you gotta get endorsed by those same white owners. That remember, first impressions are it's the best. I mean, yes, Michael Jordan, he could dribble the ball well, but he was denied ownership of the Washington Wizards.
Exactly, you know what I mean? Right there, and see, that's the issues that black people need to bring up. It's one thing to talk about, racism, but talk about that kind of racism. Say, wait a minute, how come we got the money, yet we aren't allowed to own anything? Because, black people own, they say, 0.01%
of
the wealth in this country. That's nothing. That's nothing. And we've been here for over 400 years, and we really haven't gained nothing.
Yeah.
The people.
Other than
you can't tell me not to go to the white water fountain or the colored water fountain. That's about it, or the Klan not lynching us every single day like it once was. I mean, that's about the promotion we got. Obama playing the game. I mean, Obama's not really doing anything that I could say, he's looking out for even, I'm going to say, the poor people to a point, because Obama looks out for the corporations, too.
I'm actually taking a class and we're studying, the different things that like, like basically it's like civil rights and race politics. We're just talking about how the things that have happened to black people. And the problem is that Obama has tried to do something, but there are people that have actually openly said, I am going to do everything in my power to make sure that nothing he wants to happen happens.
Well, and also don't forget to mention that, you know, like, don't forget these pastors made us apathetic. I mean, the advice, so, like, you've been missing some of our, these pastors. How come they don't talk about wealth or clean up our conditions?
Oh, don't get me started about these pastors. Now, you know what I'm saying? these pastors actually have more of a responsibility to talk about the issues. In my opinion, the people who should be out there cleaning up the black community is the pastors, not no politician, not no Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson or whatever. Because how is you got a church on every corner in the black community, yeah, you got thugs everywhere. There's no reason for that to be going on. I'm sorry. To me, a lot of times he was playing church. Because if you got did the work of like Dr. Martin Luther King did, that's getting outside the four walls of that church and engaging things in the community. I mean, those, if the pastors would get together and say, you know what, we're sick of this stuff. We're going to demand things be changed in the community, and this is how we're going to do it. We're going to take that tithe money, we're going to go down to the police department, and we're going to get contracts set up with the police department to have police officers stationed inside the community every single day, one officer every 12 hours, let's say at nighttime hours. And I know the reason why I say that can happen, because the homeowner association that I was in my previous house, they had in the contract that a Harris County sheriff had to be out there in the neighborhood all night.
Here's another thing, advice. So how about we have a group of brothers, masculine brothers, dudes like the Deacons of Defense, be policing the community? You don't have to need police officers per se. How about you have Deacons of Defense just marching around with weapons that help our people?
We can do that, but you know how far that's going to go when we start carrying weapons. That's a stand your ground law is going to disappear when we start using them. I tell you that right now. Because technically, yes, let's say Texas. You can do that here in Texas. You can have a group of guys walk up to some thugs and say, hey, you can get out of that corner. If they pull weapons, you can say, well, you know what? I was scared because they pulled a weapon on me. I shot them. I mean, it would be considered a standing ground case or whatever. And nobody would even feel bad if you shot a thug and took one of them out. But
yeah.
You know how that goes.
Why should
we have to do that when them thugs are scared of that man anyway?
Well, because it's just like I said, I know, but the police are corrupt. That's the problem, especially in the Tampa Bay area where I live at. You know, like, you got thugs, but they want to. It's like if you get a group of masculine brothers, you know, they'd be, like, although they're scared of that guy in the badge, they should be scared of brothers like me and you. And I'll bet you come down to the Tampa Bay area, you know, like, you probably teach some folks some lessons. And Gabriella as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, brother. I get it. What I'm saying is, some things we do not know in the black community, and thing is, some things that white folks just live by that we should adopt. And one thing I believe in and we should adopt in the black community is having more pride in our communities and also take a hard stance to get this criminal element out.
But you know how it is that, don't snitch. No snitching. I mean, you can actually, there's been times when you could see somebody actually back up a U-Haul truck to somebody's house when, you know, everybody knows that this family went out of town. And they'll back up a U-Haul truck to their house, take all their stuff out, and drive away. And people will be awake, you know, it'll be late at night, but people will still know what's happening, but they won't say anything.
Well, it's because
there's that no, it's like, oh, don't snitch.
Well, it's because they got that no snitching policy from slavery, you know what I mean? It's just like, there's nothing new under the sun, you guys. It's just like I asked the co-host of TED Talk. That's why we talk about black innovators every Tuesday night, to get our people to know about our history, know about we did invent things. You know what I mean? It's just that I'm tired seeing negative images of our people. You know what I mean? It's just like I don't want to get felt the sting of it. You know what I mean, Gabriella? It's just like, you know, how about what would happen if a group of black actors say, you know what? we're going to develop a movie on Black Wall Street.
They could do that, and that would be an awesome movie to do. Like say that movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard it's awesome. 12 Years a Slave. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard it's the most graphic slavery movie that's been came out. You know, and why more people aren't talking about that? You know what I'm saying? It's directed by a black director. You get what I'm saying?
You know his name?
I don't know his name now off the top of my head, but I know it's a black director that directed that movie. And I saw the synopsis of the movie, and every person that I've read it on the synopsis and the reviews, they said it was a great movie. They said they'll watch it again and all this other stuff. So, I mean, we need to support these brothers when they're coming out with these movies, too, talking about our history and stuff. If you don't support these brothers or sisters that's doing it, then they're not going to come out with no more movies at all.
Well, unfortunately, but you think about it, though. If you made a video, there's people like Afro Synergy, there's plenty of YouTubers and, you know, film directors that have came out and made movies or just have spoken out about, you know, things that have happened in the black community, and nobody will pay them any attention. And sometimes they're like, well, I might as well just give up because I can sit here and spend hours trying to make, you know, get information to make this video to talk about what happened in the Black Wall Street, but then it'll probably only get like 200 views. But then sit there and post the same nasty twerk video on his channel and get a million views in the same day.
Well, Ms. Gabrielle, let me tell you something. This is what I figured out about people. You could throw those kind of videos in there on YouTube, but you gotta be strategic with it to get people to watch it. You get what I'm saying? Because, like, I put up the video on Black Wall Street back in July 5th, 2013, and it had got, like, 197 likes, 142 comments, 10,000 views. Mm-hmm. Now, I threw it in. See, you got to throw it in at the right time. You can't make a channel just based on that because nobody will watch it. But you got to take some responsibility and say, okay, now I'm going to throw this kind of video in here in the midst of all my stuff, and I'm going to get people to watch it. And a lot of the comments that people had put up on that particular video from even back then to now, a lot of people didn't even know about it. You get what I'm saying? They were saying, why didn't we learn about this in school? You know what I'm saying? They were talking about how we looked out for each other and nobody was for themselves. And I mean, it's a bunch of comments that people have put out on that particular video, which is awesome. I mean, I love to see this, that people didn't really know much about it, and, you know, maybe it could help us return back to, you know, what we used to be. I like that video I put up about that my dad's neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if you saw that video I put up about my dad's neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And people want to see things like that. They really do. That one had got, like, what, 141 likes, 147 comments. You know, 8,000, you know, views on that one. And the reason people were so excited to see that, and so people want to see the positive stuff. Yes, they do. You just got to take advantage of your particular, following to say, okay, now I'm going to start introducing this stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I could talk about hood rats all day long, but why don't I talk about something that's worthwhile or I feel that I could add to the situation? I mean, I've talked about the Deacon's Defense. I talked about the, Tuskegee experiment, stuff like that, that people really didn't know. So I try my best if I can add something to it when I feel that I can really put it out there like that, which I do need to look into more things, you know what I'm saying? Because they got women like, for instance, Madam C.J. Walker that a lot of sisters don't even know about.
I learned about her a long time ago.
Yeah, you may have learned about her, but a lot of black people don't know much about her.
First female to earn $1 million.
Yeah, on top of that, and then she was the innovator of the pressing comb, where it was no perm.
I mean, she was the one that made products for black women.
Yeah.
When there was nothing out there.
Exactly.
So.
And my thing is, what would she think about all this weave and perm today, this obsession with it, when she basically let women keep their natural hair, they straighten their hair at the same time, and black women's hair was down their backs.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have all that stuff you got on today. Thing is, and that was a black-owned, you know, product. You didn't have, you know, black people running to all these Koreans, giving away all their money, and then they still disrespecting them, looking at them side-eyed, funny, and everything, and when they come in their stores, oh, you going to steal from me? And then sometimes they do, because I've gotten videos where you have, you know, goons and goonettes running there doing the Great Weave heist.
Right, but I work for a black-owned hair company. And I also work, I know of black women that do have their own places with, like, I work for Queen of Diamonds Hair Boutique. We sell hair. And it's all black owned. All the girls, all the models are black women.
Well, let me ask you a question. Okay, fine. I have no issue with that if it's a black owned company. But the thing is, how is it these Koreans come in and just basically took it over? Literally, they took it over.
Well, because they had, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. You know, if they wanted to start their own business, they saw an opportunity and they jumped on it. I see nothing wrong with that. The thing is that I wish I could see more black-owned hair companies and hair businesses. But the problem is that a lot of, the caller was talking about how a lot of people don't have the resources. A lot of black people, it's like, oh, I want to start a business. I have family members and people that I've known who have tried to start businesses, but they didn't have the resources and the know-how and the connections to be able to get that business off the ground. So it's not that it's, the problem is that a lot of black folks just don't know.
Yeah, but, I get it, that some black people do not know. But you know what? You can go find out and you can try your best. Because one thing I found out, if you try hard enough, you can make it. But it's the thing, too. I want to add, too. Okay, let me get it out. This is what I want to add. When you do have a business, black people, please, for the love of God in heaven, be professional. Don't be doing stuff late. Don't be promising and not delivering. Please don't do that. Because as blacks, we are already leery of other black people in business because of that. And what happens, we'll be so supportive of, hey, black-owned businesses, I'm support blacks, and this and third. Then we run into time and time again, a black person screw us over, not treating us right. Then we go over to the white-owned businesses, and they treat us like we kings and queens, giving us good customer service. That happens a lot. Why black people don't want to support other black people in business, because you don't want to do right by your own people.
It's just that you don't want to do right by your own people. Sometimes I've been to black-owned restaurants. They treat me like I'm the lowest thing out there, man. It's like, this is the last time I'm going to come to that. I'm not going to name the store, but it's just like if you go to some of these black-owned businesses, some of them treat you like crap. Some of them.
It's true.
You know, like I'm looking at them like, come on, man. I look like you, man. Why do you treat me like the enemy?
And no other group of people does that. Nobody. Everybody in their own communities, support each other, and they have no issues. Matter of fact, they go out of their way to support each other. But us, no, we won't do that. And then when we in business, we don't treat each other right. We're trying to, some of us want to come in there and want a discount for everything. We don't want a discount.
Yeah.
I mean, we just won't treat, it's wrong. It is utterly wrong. I've been through that recently. You know what I'm saying? And Miss Gabriella.
I have twice.
You deal with black folks in some business.
Twice.
Not get what you.
And I got messed over. I lost my money and didn't get anything. And when I did get a result from, like, I asked somebody to do something for me, and when I finally got it back, it was just a piece of crap.
Yeah.
So
then you get to a point and you say, you know what? I don't even want to fool black folks no more. And you deal with one business that's white owned. And you get what you paid for.
Yeah.
And that's why white folks have stuff, because they look at, hey, my reputation means everything. I want these people to come back. So I'm not going to do bad on them. Some of them will call
it's
you.
It's not even about whether I like her or not, or whether I think. Because, like, the problem is that a lot of blacks, I'm not going to say blacks in general, but I've seen that there's, like, this thing where, oh, well, I think that she looks prettier than me, so I'm going to treat her bad. Or they have more money and they think they're better than me, so I'm going to disrespect them. And a lot of people are just so caught up on the wrong things that they don't think about, okay, well, I need to build the clientele. I need to get these people to like me, because if they like me, they'll come back and I'll make more money. They don't think about that. And it's not even about being fake. It's about just being kind and having good business practices, but they don't understand that.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, if you see brothers, and sisters who, like, I might as well tell you advice. So, like, I tell you that I am going to the tech field out there. Remember I told you about that show, but you know, slowly but surely, it's chugging along.
It's not going to be easy for you because you're a black dude. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, well, at least with other black folks. Now, if you're good, I can honestly say this. If you are good at something and white people see that you're good at it, they'll support you. They really will. No problem. And they don't even ask you for discounts.
Yeah, you know?
Black people are, come on, bro. Man, come on, man. We brothers. I mean, what about some sort of discount, man?
No,
ain't no discount. This is the price. You pay for it. If you can't afford it, then come back when you can.
Especially.
Or when they – or they'll sit there and they, like, they'll sit there and you ask them to do something by – like, I say, I want you to do this by January 1st, and they're sitting there in August and April talking about, well, I'm in the hospital and my wife left me and blah, 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 and they're making them silly excuses because they're like, oh, well, you know, you're my black brother, so you understand.
No, I don't understand.
It's like, no, if I paid my money, I expect my service.
It's like I said, straight up. It is sad. Every time I deal with white people in some business, I get what I pay for.
I tried my best
to deal with black people with my stuff. I tried. Lord knows I tried, and I've been disappointed at least 3 times already.
Well, I will say this, you know, these black-owned businesses, not all of them are bad. There are some people who are doing the work, but at the same time, you know, I was having a conversation, you know, with a friend of mine. I asked him, you know, why is it that we always get crapped on and stuff like that? How come we don't see, all we see in the community is barbershops, soul food restaurants,
hair salons.
But we don't see no IBMs. We don't see no black startup companies that deals with computers. And he told me that, you know, the problem with black folks is that it's not because they can't do it. It's because that they never been taught this. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I will make a prediction to you and Gabala in the next 5 to 10 years that if black people don't get it together in the next 5 to 10 years, we will be technologically behind forever. Because you know how fast technology is going?
The collective? I believe that for the collective. I don't believe that for all of us. Because a brother like myself, you know, I think
they date on everything.
I don't,
just a select few, though.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But what I'm trying to say, I'm talking about the new tech jobs are coming out down the pike. I'm talking about, you know, I see 4,000 jobs or 10,000 jobs in the Tampa Bay area once. You know, like having computer jobs. The days of you getting a college degree in anything are over. You know, you got to go where the market is. Now, it doesn't have to be computers. It can be healthcare. The STEM, you know, scientific, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But these type of jobs are the new middle class jobs now. This is not the days.
And people they're not thinking about that, though. Everybody, just like Judy said, everybody wants to be famous. Do you know how many emails I get from people, messages on Twitter and emails that I get from these, like, wannabe rappers and wannabe clothing company? And it's like they don't follow through. Number two, my services are very cheap. I say $5 for certain things. And then $10 for certain things. I don't ever charge any. I mean, I understand it's a tough economy. I don't think that $10 is a lot of money for me to sit there and basically give you cheap advertising, because I don't see how that's a problem. If you knew the amount of hits I get on my website, then you would understand how I'm actually doing a great service for people. But they don't even want to take that kind of thing seriously.
Oh no.
And it's like, I want to be a rapper. I want to be a rapper. I want to have a clothing company. I want to have this kind of business, that kind of business. But they don't understand how much effort it takes. And they want this fast success, too.
Let me ask you this, though, you guys. Like, why is it that, from your perspective, from you guys' perspective, why do we give our money to outsiders? Let's say, then you know that one girl who was on public assistance who gave $2,500 to Barney's. Why not she took that same $2,500 to develop wealth?
She could invest in stocks to help get her kids out of that situation. But no, she wanted to get a purse so she could show off to her other friends who aren't even doing half as well as she is.
Well, The main issue of black people, we're taught to survive, not to thrive. That's our biggest problem. And we also very vain people. We very, very vain people. Not all of us, but a lot of us are. Well, think about it. You focus so much on a car. You know, this car got to look good. That's being vain. Your clothes got to look good, or your shoes got to look good. That's being vain. Everything is vain. You know, stuff that do not matter at the end of the day. You could take that $2,500 and open you up an E-Trade account and start investing money into these different companies. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, myself, I'd be studying billionaires. What did billionaires do? How did they invest? How did they do that? You know what I'm saying? And then when you make it, then the same black folks, you uppity. You think you're like, wait a minute, dude. I didn't trick off my money like you.
The same one calling me broke just because I didn't want to wear designer clothes every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, especially in my situation, but like you say, I told you this like as I was calling last week or the week before, I'm getting 2 certifications in computers. You know, and these same group of Negro them, you know, saying, you get 2 computer certifications in cybersecurity and Cisco engineering in a bachelor's degree, and you don't have no student loan debt, and they still call me uppity. Man, how come I see you work on campus being a computer tutor, but yet you don't spend on those joints? I don't see you at the mall. Because I said, dude, I don't believe in being broke.
Because I'm not saying it's bad. I have certain things that are designer that I've spent money on, but that shouldn't be your main priority. I can probably count all the stuff that I have as name brand on one hand. Everything else is cheap stuff. But it's like black people don't understand how to invest. They don't understand. It's like I've talked to these people, the same people that are emailing me asking me to promote their stuff basically for damn near free, and I tell them that over this past year, I spent probably, I would even say, up in the thousands. Well, maybe not that high, but maybe at least $3,000, at least. I've lost track of how much money I've spent trying to get my name out there, trying to, you know, better myself and do the things that I need to do to take my career more seriously. And they're like, I don't have that kind of money. I'm like, okay, well, you have money to spend on designer clothes and go to the club every weekend, but you don't have money to invest in yourself.
Well, and here's another thing I found. My dad told me to be an owner, not a consumer. That's what my dad always told me, and my grandpappy always told me. Be an owner and a consumer. And I was mean to ask you guys, you know, from your honest opinion that I told you I'm the co-host of TED Talk. But I just wonder if you guys maybe one day you guys can interview me like why I developed the soul. Maybe one day, I'm not saying right now, but maybe in the near future. Advaso?
Yeah, I'm here. Like, me and Ms. Gabriella can talk about that. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, we got our, you know, shows kind of lined up, but yeah, that's something we could definitely discuss in the future. Let me see if somebody jumped on the line real quick for the show at the end. Erico 229, you on the show?
Hey, what's up? How y'all doing, man?
How you doing?
Hey,
yeah, what's on your mind? We got 2 minutes and 39 seconds left for the show end.
Oh, man, I called the last minute.
You sure did.
I was just calling to see what the show was about, but I pretty much missed everything, it looks like.
Well, like I said, you can check it on the website, or you can check it on Blog Talk Radio. Like I said, the first part of the show, we did an interview with Judy from Bad Girls Club, and then we got into the topic. So, you know, she was very animated, as what I would have thought, you know, so.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sounds good, man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, before the show ends, I would like for you to, this is the easiest, let me get off this thing. I just heard a loud noise. I would like you guys to go on my website. You can follow me on all my social sites. All the links are right there on the sidebar. And, I mean, you don't have to, but I would appreciate it if you did.
Oh.
So it's www.g, as in George, okay, GIGI-ASARE.com. And you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that. And I would just appreciate your support and all that. It would mean the world to me.
Well,
you know, support your students and your up and coming entrepreneurs.
Well, make
just
sure
do, if you can't do it for anything else, just do it for that. Just do it for that cause.
So support Ms. Gabriella, because like I said, she really needs y'all's support. Y'all support me, support Ms. Gabriella. That's how I look at it. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for joining the show. Next week, we'll have a show on feminism and white privilege. Now, our guest will be Ms. Erin Mattson. She is editor-at-large. I forgot what magazine, but she's an actual feminist also. So I'm looking forward to talking to her, because I have a lot of questions about feminism, and she brought up the fact that, you know, she can do certain things because she's a white woman, because she has white privilege and she don't think it's right. So I want to talk about those things with her next Monday. So definitely join me for that particular show, because I'm ready for that one. So thank you, everybody, for joining, and see you next week.